from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening hour, earlier today, the bipartisan group of U.S. senators dubbed the Gang of Eight filed an immigration reform bill that would include a pathway to citizenship for the 11 million people who stay in the U.S. illegally. We'll talk about the legislation and its controversial proposal that would allow immigrants to become citizens after a 13-year process. Forum is next. Join us and join in after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Earlier today, a sweeping bipartisan immigration bill was filed by eight U.S. senators. The bill would bring an estimated 11 million illegal immigrants on a 13-year path to legalization, as well as allow for more immigrants to enter the United States based on what they can offer in the way of job skills and personal assets. Additionally, the bill would require the spending of some $6.5 billion by Homeland Security over 10 years to increase enforcement and extend fencing around the southwest border, before any immigrants living within the United States could apply for permanent residency, border security programs would need to be completely in operation. In this morning's opening Forum Hour, we focus on the Big Eight immigration proposal. And joining us from near Washington in Virginia is Laura McGann, who is deputy managing editor of Politico. And welcome to the program, Laura McGann.
Hi, glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have Jessica Vaughn, who joins us from up in Massachusetts. She's director of policy studies with the Center for Immigration Studies, a Washington, D.C.-based research institute. And good morning and welcome, Jessica Vaughn.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you. And Cecilia Wong is here with us in studio. She is director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Immigration Rights Project. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you. And Laura McGann, let me begin, if I may, with you. I outlined at least some of the general specifics here. This is an 800-page document, though, that they put forward, and a lot of compromising, a lot of hotboxing and hammering, and the Gang of Eight nevertheless managed to hang together in this. It essentially offers a path to citizenship. What else is in here, though, that really needs to be highlighted?
I think the interesting thing right now that we're seeing is that, you know, you see the Gang of Eight sticking with this, you know, they're hanging together, but you know, they are worried about opposition. And so far, the primary opposition to the bill has not been kill the bill. It's business interests who want improvement to the bill. And so while that sounds promising, I think the detail will be, you know, if any one business interest were able, you know, to peel off one section of the deal and get it changed, it could throw the whole thing off balance because it's so negotiated and there was so much give and take to put the package together. So I think that's the next thing we're going to watch for.
Well, the main drivers were, first of all, the high-tech industry, a lot of it are located, of course, here in Silicon Valley, and agriculture and agribusiness. And, you know, depending, I suppose, if you look at the glass half full or half empty, they both seem to have come out pretty well. I know Zoe Lofgren, who has been lobbying on behalf of certainly congressional representing the interests of Silicon Valley, and Dianne Feinstein, the agribusiness, seem rather pleased with this.
Well, it is true that I think you could argue that either of those industries are getting more out of this bill than where they are now, but that doesn't mean they're content and that they're not going to lobby to get more. Agriculture is going to hold a press call this afternoon to talk about how they want greater access to low-skilled workers. They don't think the deal that they got is good enough. The tech community has been sort of mixed. I think there's been reporting out this morning about the numbers that they got of high-skilled visas versus what they wanted, and it does seem like they're going to get more than what they have now, but that doesn't mean that the lobbying is going to stop around getting an even better deal. So I think that there is sort of that nuance. If no one is opposing the bill outright, and by when I say no one, I mean there are no major industries who are major drivers of the negotiation saying, let's kill the bill. But the lobbying is going to continue around, you know, hey, my interest, I want a little bit more.
Well, there are going to be hearings on Friday, and according to Charles Schumer, who is one of those who has been sponsoring, one of the senators from the so-called Gang of Eight, the goal is on getting this bill into the Senate in late May and actually or early June. There is likely to be more opposition, I imagine, and more difficulty getting through the House of Representatives, wouldn't there?
Yeah, I think in terms of the deal the Gang of Eight cut, a lot of the lobbying was around industry, you know, getting labor and getting industry on board to support this. And then I think as you shift to the House, you're going to start to see other factors at play. Just to define it specifically, I mean, you could argue that immigration reform might be good for the Republican Party as a whole, but that doesn't mean an individual House Republican needs to do immigration to keep his seat. And in fact, it might actually hurt an individual House Republican in a specific district. So the challenge after it moves out of the Senate is to get these House Republicans to vote possibly against their interests, their specific interests. And one thing I just saw this morning here is Ralph Reed gave a full-throated endorsement of the bill this morning, which is very interesting. I think you've seen much greater rallying around immigration reform by the evangelical community than you did in 2006, and that's one indicator of some cover for House Republicans. So that's one positive thing to look for, but I'm not saying we know exactly how it'll play out, but that is just one kind of early sign of a difference between 2006, a piece of cover that was not there in the same way.
Well, President Obama has spoken favorably about the bill, and this is the most complete kind of or most comprehensive kind of reform since 2006. So maybe we'd hear from Marco Rubio, who is Senator Marco Rubio is one of the so-called Gang of Eight, senator from Florida and certainly a Republican leader and many touting as a likely possible candidate. He was at one time, of course, very opposed to immigration reform. But here's what he had to say about this.
I am not happy. I am not pleased with. I am not in support of the reality that we have 10 or 11 million people in this country that are undocumented. I wish we didn't have that problem. Quite frankly, the decisions that led to that problem were made when I was in ninth grade. But we do have that problem. We're not talking about bringing in 11 million people undocumented. They are here now. And we have four choices. We can leave it the way it is, which is de facto amnesty. We can try to round everybody up and send them back, which I don't think is workable. We can make life miserable for them, so that they'll deport themselves. I don't think that works either. Or we can try to address it in a way that's responsible but humane, in a way that isn't unfair to the people that are doing it the right way, and doesn't encourage people to do it the wrong way in the future. And that's what I think we've arrived at, and I hope I can convince people that this is the right approach.
Well, there may be a lot of convincing to do as we're discussing this, particularly in the House of Representatives, with Laura McGann, who is deputy managing editor for Politico. I want to get into some of the specifics of the bill, and Cecilia Wong is here with us. Cecilia, she's director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project. Let's just, first of all, say, I guess that you're pretty happy with this and think it's the step in the right direction or steps in the right direction?
Absolutely a step in the right direction. This is a potentially historic moment where America is going to get on track and get millions of immigrants who have been making contributions to our country out of the shadows and onto the road to citizenship. Having said that, of course, we have some concerns that road to citizenship may not be accessible as it should be for everyone. And there are some parts of the bills that we have the bill that we have concerns with. But overall, it is a great step forward for our country.
Well, one of your concerns is, I suppose, it won't be inclusive or the process might not be fair.
That's right. There are a couple concerns we have in that regard so far in reviewing the hundreds of pages that the Gang of Eight has put forward. The first is that there are some very strict economic tests for people to adjust their status from this provisional status to having a green card that would require people to meet 100% of the federal poverty guideline level in their earning and would make people show continuous employment with no gaps of more than 60 days. That's a concern, Michael, because there are many working immigrants who are supporting themselves and their families and have no access to federal welfare benefits or state welfare benefits who might be seasonal workers. To give an example, a single mother with two kids would have to make more than $10.50 an hour in order to make those benchmarks. And we have concerns that that's going to put workers at risk of exploitation at the hands of employers because they feel obligated to stay in jobs where they're being exploited or cheated.
But notwithstanding those concerns, I understand the positive response the ACLU has had to this. I just wonder what you would say, for example, to some of the criticism that it favors illegals against American workers and those who come here legally is, I suppose, the biggest concern from the opposition. And also that one of the leading Republicans on the immigration issue, of course, is Lamar Smith. And he said this is only going to encourage more illegal immigration.
Well, I think that Representative Smith and others who are resisting this immigration reform are really out of touch with where the American people are on this. Recent polls, including one out of CNN yesterday, show that over 80% of Americans favor a road to citizenship for immigrants who are going to get in line, pay a penalty as required under this bill, and go forward and become citizens. And given that reality, the political reality and the mandate that the American people have set for Congress, I think that we're going to move forward.
Let me move forward and bring Jessica Vaughn into this discussion. And Jessica Vaughn works with Mark Krikorian, who's been on this program a number of times. They are an organization that is the Center for Immigration Studies, which believes in much tighter standards. First of all, Jessica Vaughn, what's your response to that CNN poll? Over 80% supposedly agree of Americans that there should be a path to citizenship?
Well, sure. I think most people, and I too, believe very firmly that we should have a path to citizenship for people who are legal immigrants. But the real question here is not what that path is going to look like, how long it takes to get on it, but what the real controversial thing about this bill that's finally been released is, should we be doing this at all for 11 or 12 million people who are living here illegally now? Not how long should it take them to become citizens, but should they be given legalization at all? This bill is interesting because it is basically a rehash of the same proposals that were introduced and failed in 2006 and 2007, basically a massive amnesty immediately, with promises of enforcement to come at some point in the future, which is going to inspire more illegal immigration and make things harder for American workers and legal immigrants who are already in competition with people who are working illegally. Not only that, it expands legal immigration by about 50% for the next 10 years and increases temporary work programs to bring in even more workers to come and do jobs that are now being done by Americans. So there is no economic justification for this bill. It's not going to be popular, and it's going to make those Americans who are already struggling and unemployed and for whatever reason have not had the chance to get an education, it's going to make things that much worse for those people. And that's what's going to be really controversial about this bill. It puts the interests of 11 or 12 million illegal immigrants ahead of the interests of American workers who are suffering now.
Well, I know your organization has been particularly strident on the issue of border security. What are you so skeptical about with respect to this promise of even more secure borders? I mean, there's more technology and more money that's going to be poured in, and yet I hear your skepticism.
Well, what this bill would do is provide an instant amnesty to people at such time as the Secretary of Homeland Security submits a plan for border security. That's the trigger for legalization, is just submitting a plan. The plan doesn't even have to be approved by Congress. It just has to be issued. That's not an improvement in security. That's just more talk about securing the border. And it doesn't address the problem of the 40% of illegal immigrants who arrive here with legal visas in it through an airport. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't address that problem at all. It just kicks the can down the road 10 years and says, in 10 years, we'll solve that problem.
So from your perspective, let's just talk for a moment about what more needs to be done for good border security. That is, aside from, well, finishing the fence or having more agents or maybe more layers of security.
Those are all important, but what we most need is enforcement of our immigration laws in the interior. Enforcement has dropped about 40% since June 2011 when the Obama administration issued a new policy on enforcement known as prosecutorial discretion. We've seen 40% fewer people removed, 40% fewer criminals removed. All of the focus really has been on recent border crossers. And if we're to really show that we're serious about enforcement, we need to enforce the laws in the interior of the country as well. And that's not happening. And frankly, no one has any reason to trust that this administration will do anything about enforcement because it hasn't taken it seriously yet. So why should it now under the auspices of this legislation? It's just not going to happen.
We are talking about a sweeping bipartisan immigration bill, which was filed earlier today by 8 U.S. senators. It would presumably lead to a pathway for citizenship for 11 million people who are here in the United States illegally. And we're talking about it with Laura McGann, who's deputy managing editor of Politico, Cecilia Wong, who's here in studio, who directs the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project, and Jessica Vaughn, director of policy studies for the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington. I'd like to have you, our listeners, weigh in on this and give you an opportunity now to call us and let us know your thoughts about it. I want to flesh out some of the details in this because there are a lot of devilish details, to be sure, but find out your general reaction to what we're talking about with the immigration reform bill and what you perhaps think is missing or what you'd like to see in it or just how you respond to it. And whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite, you can join us now. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. And as I said, the time to call is now if you have something to contribute. It's 866-733-6786. Number of other ways to join us. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, and we welcome your emails, or you can post any of your questions, comments, concerns, and reactions onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. But please feel free to join the conversation. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Let me just, before we bring in our listeners, Laura McGann, let me just go back to you and find out a little bit more of the details, because there are kind of two new guest worker programs for farm workers. And again, there are details like the Dreamers, those young illegals who came here as children, could become citizen in 5 years. I mean, again, there are a lot of details here that I think when you look at the whole picture and the specifics, move us into some different dimensions entirely.
Sure. I mean, I think the way that the Gang of Eight hashed out this deal is that they had to do a give and take. And I think that the carve out for young people who came, you know, I think it's sort of the sentiment behind the DREAM Act, which actually failed in Congress a few years ago. But it basically says, you know, if you were brought to the country when you were a child, you know, there's a separate process for you. And I believe it is 5 years faster, but I'm actually not, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I'm pretty sure it is at least a few years faster than the normal track. Which
I think
it would
be 6 years faster.
Right, five years.
It's five years instead of 11, yeah.
Right. So, 13. I mean, I think that, and I think you can see the politics behind that there was quite a lot of support in the Senate for the DREAM Act, which would have given a path to citizenship for children who came to the United States illegally. Marco Rubio himself, who was a key negotiator in the Gang of Eight, had supported his own version of it. I think it polls well with the American public. Barack Obama came out during the election, actually, during the campaign season, and sort of crafted his own executive policy to sort of take the place of to do the best he could as an executive action to sort of replace the DREAM Act that didn't pass. So I think you can kind of see the politics in the details of the bill.
Actually, I'm looking at President Obama's statement here, and he says this bill is clearly a compromise and no one will get everything they wanted, including me.
Sure. Well, I mean, number one, Barack Obama always says that. But number two, I think it is actually true in this case.
I think it is too. Yeah.
This was a deal. And so when you kind of look at the details, you can kind of you could kind of see that there was politicking behind it to get it done. And I don't say, and I sometimes I'll say things like that to kind of a general audience, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean that this was deal cutting in sort of the way Washington is supposed to work, of people kind of hash out negotiations on big policies. And so that's all I mean by it.
Well, let me just give a few more details. The proposal calls actually for issuing agricultural workers a new type of legal status card. It's called a blue card. And we're talking about the undocumented immigrants who arrived in the United States before December 31st, 2011. They'd be eligible for legal residency. They can't have felony convictions. Smaller offenses can also block residency. The bill would actually block applicants with more than three misdemeanor convictions, including for offenses such as reckless driving, trespassing, or vandalism. You can see that a lot of effort went into this. And it's
you can see that. I actually would be interested to hear Cecilia's reaction to some of those deals. You know, are we going to see sort of the advocate community push on a better deal on some of these kinds of issues that make it, you know, sort of the roadblocks to the path? You know, is the advocacy community pretty happy with it or not happy with it? I would just be curious, just because we're starting to see the details and I haven't heard.
Well, Cecilia said before that there are things that she, for the most part,
right,
is happy with, but with respect to costs and the like.
Right.
But what about some of these other details that I'm mentioning? There is devil in the details. And by the way, we should also mention that members of the Republican-led House of Representatives are working out their own immigration overhaul plan, which would include border security measures. But Cecilia, please, go ahead.
Right. I mean, I think we've pointed now to one of the major shortcomings of the Road to Citizenship in the bill. And that is that any felony conviction is an automatic disqualifier. And I think that what we'll be pushing for is to permit the federal government and federal immigration courts to make individualized decisions, to look at an immigrant as a human being and decide, is some particular criminal conviction something that should disqualify the person, or do they have other factors going for them? The reason that that's particularly important in this moment is that over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen restrictionist groups pushing anti-immigrant divisive laws in states like Arizona and Alabama. And in many of those places, you see immigrants suffering convictions at the hands of these local authorities who disagree with the mission of comprehensive immigration reform and are convicting immigrants for things like driving without a license or working without authorization. Those things will now let these local prosecutors effectively make decisions about who should set out on the road to citizenship. And it's the federal government who should do that.
And your response to that, Jessica Vaughn?
Well, again, I think a lot of this is really a distraction from the main issue of should we be doing a legalization program at all. But, I think it's hard to argue that somebody with an aggravated felony conviction should be eligible for legalization at all. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security estimates that there are something like 2 million non-citizens in the country who have been arrested for a crime of one kind or another. And the reality is that this piece of legislation would enable a very large percentage of them to still qualify for this amnesty. I mean, it's just sort of another indication of how lenient they're willing to be to make sure that as many people as possible get legalized. But I'd like to comment on this idea that this bill is somehow a product of compromise. I mean, really, the deal was made among a group of senators who are not particularly representative of the Senate as a whole, and certainly not very representative of the country as a whole. They're all known for their advocacy for doing a mass legalization program of some kind, and the only compromise that they had to reach was about language and how they were going to sell it to their respective constituencies. It hasn't really had a lot of daylight shown on it. I mean, this is something that was done behind doors.
We're coming up on a hard break here, so I want to just, I want to move us along. I have to move us along. But when we come back, we'll hear from you, our listeners, and bring you into this. Again, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. Talking about immigration reform bill put forward by the Gang of Eight. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Earlier today, a group of senators, a bipartisan group of senators that's been dubbed the Gang of Eight, have filed a bipartisan immigration bill, and the bill would essentially bring an estimated 11 million illegal immigrants on a 13-year path to legalization, as well as allow for more immigrants to enter the United States based on what they can offer in the way of job skills and personal assets. And we're talking about that and analyzing it with Laura McGann, Deputy Managing Director of Politico, and Jessica Vaughn, Director of Policy Studies with the Center for Immigration Studies, and Cecilia Wong, Director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project. Let me go right to your phone calls. And now Terry here, and we go to Jennifer in Sacramento. Good morning.
Good morning. My husband's illegal. We've been married for 3 years. He was deported in absentia long before we were married. And, you know, I don't know if this still includes him or not, but, you know, we live like a life hiding in plain sight. And there's more like me. We don't have any children, but I have lots of friends who have American citizen spouses and American citizen children who are, some are living in exile together, some are living apart, some are living under the radar. So what about my tribe?
Well, let me go to our attorney here from the ACLU. How do you read that, Cecilia Wong?
Well, the bill does provide that people who have previous deportation orders are still going to be eligible if they meet the other criteria. So the good news is that for families like the callers who've been living in the shadows and who have been separated, good news is on the way if this bill passes.
Jessica Vaughn, you had referred to this as an amnesty, and of course that word is very loaded and everything. Why do you call it amnesty still?
Well, it's a forgiveness of this person's breaking of immigration laws to come and live here illegally. They basically get to live here, work here, travel in and out of the country from the get-go. And that, I think by most people's definition, would be an amnesty. I mean, you can call it a legalization, whatever you want, but the fact is that people who came here in defiance of our immigration laws will be allowed to stay.
And you do not call this amnesty, Cecilia Wong?
No, it's not amnesty in any way. It's an arduous 13-year road to citizenship for people who've been making contributions and are willing to pay the penalty, pay their taxes, and can show that they're eligible. This is going to be a long process for people, but as Representative Gutierrez of Illinois said recently, immigrants are the first to say that they'll do whatever it takes to become U.S. citizens. And I think that what's beautiful about this bill, despite its shortcomings, is that it lets people get on that road.
Well, we'll take more of your calls. And Maya, join us. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Hi. So first, a disclaimer. I'm the daughter of immigrants. We came here under the best and worst of circumstances, the worst because we are practically war refugees, the best of circumstances because everything was perfectly legal. My dad was a naturalized U.S. citizen with ancestry going back to Ellis Island, etc. So the legal issue was never in play in my life. However, I cannot feel disconnected from this topic. Like most immigrants, well, like a lot of immigrants, I feel lucky as opposed to deserving of having been granted this opportunity to, you know, save my life and have a better future. So the one point I want to address is Ms. Vaughn's argument about jobs. I'm an engineer working in high tech for the past 12 years. I've seen American companies offshore millions of jobs overseas that very capable Americans can do and do in a much more efficient way simply because labor is so much cheaper overseas. So I just want to say that one particular argument just doesn't hold water. You lose me when you make it.
All right, Jessica Vaughn.
I don't know how you can argue any other way that increasing the number of people who are available for a certain job is going to put downward pressure on what the employer has to pay to get that job done. I mean, we see that happen all over the place, whether it's with professionals in the high-tech industry or unskilled workers. I mean, here where I live in Massachusetts, a couple of years ago, the Hyatt hotel chain fired about 90 women who had worked for them. Many of them raised their children on these jobs. They were making $14 an hour with paid vacation, paid benefits. They were replaced by a contract with a staffing company that brought in illegal workers from Georgia, and they paid them $8 an hour, no benefits, no vacation. it's a race to the bottom as long as there is an endless supply of workers coming in who are willing to do that job for less. And that's what's going to happen if we do not get some kind of control over our immigration policy.
I'd like you, if you would, just move on to respond to another emailer named Chris, who says, I heard a guest say, and that was you, I believe, the Obama administration is doing nothing to enforce immigration laws. Has she been to southern Arizona? It's like a war zone down by Bisbee. I've heard complaints that this administration has deported more people than any time in history. How is that doing nothing? I think that's correct in terms of the statistic.
Well, they have been able to reach their deportation numbers by cooking the books. Basically, what they've done is instead of removing people from the interior of the country, they've started removing people who have been caught by the Border Patrol, who were never counted before. So, you know, it's a simple numbers game and a shell game. There aren't more people actually being removed from the interior of the country than before. It simply isn't true. It's gone down 40% since 2011. And, you know, yes, the border has gotten better in recent years, but it is far from secure. And if you talk to people who live in the area down there, they'll tell you that they feel that they are in a sacrifice zone and have been abandoned by their government because the smuggling cartels have essentially taken over the border areas to carry out their smuggling of people and drugs and all kinds of other contraband. The border is not under control by any stretch of the imagination. It is better, but we can do a lot more, and we need to do a lot more.
Well, here's a listener who agrees with you, and I want to hear Cecilia Wong respond to this. Robert, who writes, I'm amazed that border state Republicans even signed off on the toothless requirements in the bill for tight border security. As anyone who watches the news and has seen all the videos showing the drug smugglers brazenly walking across the border unimpeded by the Border Patrol, border security is non-existent outside of urban areas. The promise of a plan for border security is totally illusory, sort of like the existing requirements for administration certifications that various countries are not violating human rights, where the administration always makes a certification despite the reality of substantial human rights abuses.
You know, Michael, let's just be clear on the facts. First of all, there's no question that the Obama administration has deported more people than the Bush administration or any other
administration. And I believe had more raids, too.
And has had more raids and has separated more families. As to the border, I think that the reality is that our American communities along the southern border are in a state of siege. And this bill is actually going to squander billions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer money on additional surveillance. We have drones flying our own flying over our own country, surveilling U.S. citizens, our communities. The bill provides for additional checkpoints in the border zone. And what people who live in the border region are saying is enough is enough. We don't enjoy the same constitutional rights that other Americans do away from the border area. And this is one area where we think the bill really is falling short by buying into this notion that the border isn't secure. Back in 2007, the last time Congress considered immigration reform, the bill did not pass, but the government undertook the border security benchmarks that were part of the bill, and those benchmarks have all been met. There's no need to spend billions more and violate people's civil rights along the border region.
Let me get another a tweet in here and get a response from you, Cecilia Wong. This is Frank, who says, won't creating a permanent class of guest workers living here with no rights be bad for us all? This is for the interest of big business. They want their cake and eat it too. Low wages for people with no voting rights and driving down wages for everyone else.
Well, you know, I think that there's something to that. The bill does have protections for workers, which are essential to any kind of expanded employment-based visa programs. But I think we fundamentally have to recognize the fact that immigrants don't just contribute to the United States through their labor. People like my own parents and some of the callers who've joined us today know that immigrants come here for a variety of reasons. And those who set out on the path to citizenship want to become part of our communities and to become part of our national fabric in a formal way to formalize what already is happening around the country. And I think we should support that.
Let me read some of your web postings. Christine writes, immigration is one of the tent poles of the American experiment. It is critical that our immigration policy be nuanced, effective, robust, and well-considered. We need to get this right. So in an era when Washington, D.C. is generally considered to be dysfunctional, I am pleasantly surprised and welcoming of the Senate's efforts on this issue. This is an opportunity for the Republicans to join us in the 21st century, at least with regard to domestic policy that reflects real-world demographics. And Bob writes, a couple of thoughts. First, why is U.S. citizenship so important? Permanent residency, green card, provides the legal ability to get work, change jobs, pay taxes, pay Social Security, and eventually get those benefits, travel back and forth between the U.S. and home country, etc. Wouldn't an immigration compromise be easier to arrive at if the Democrats would give up on this aspect? Or give on this aspect? And second, as an engineer, I'm a little tired of corporations whining about more H-1B visas needed. That's largely the same old tactic of getting more cheaper labor to compete with existing labor. And Wanda writes on our website, California and the Bay Area need millions of more immigrants to provide the workers for all the jobs that are going begging. Our schools have too many empty chairs and their ample resources are underutilized and should be offered immigrant children. Our highways have unused capacity that should be exploited by newcomers. Come one, come all. We who are about to be overwhelmed salute you. And we go to another caller, and that's Carolyn. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm curious about the labor protections. I mean, industry is able to make lots of profit on the illegal immigrants now, and will these people be able to come in and get minimum wage, be able to organize in their workplace, and move between jobs? I mean, that's really what this, I mean, this bill is about labor, really, at you know, at the core of it.
Yeah, and what is it going to,
okay.
Yeah, thank you for that, Carolyn. From Cecilia Wong, your perspective as a lawyer?
Well, again, I think that the it's important that the bill protect workers from exploitation. And I think that the aspects...
Does it?
Well, I haven't had a chance to pore over those provisions in the 800-something pages, but I think that it does make efforts to do that. Those portions of the bill were hashed out through negotiations with both business and labor. And so I think that we're hoping that that will happen.
And some questions from a listener named Arthur, and I don't know, Cecilia or Jessica, if you feel equipped, please go ahead and respond to him. He says, how does this bill affect H-1B visas for outsourcing firms that will ship American jobs overseas through tech transfer, and how does it affect those who overstay their visas after having arrived legally, and how does it affect birth tourism?
Well, it increases the number of H-1B visas up to more than double what it is now, so it's definitely going to expand those and other temporary guest worker programs as well. As for addressing people who overstay their visas, it doesn't do anything but say we're going to try to address that program within 10 years. So it pretty much continues the status quo of no enforcement to speak of directed at overstays. And as for birth tourism, I don't think it addresses that issue at all. It just avoids some of the more contentious aspects of the immigration policy debate.
Another listener writes on our website, as a husband of illegal immigrant, I'm disappointed by the prioritization of illegal immigration over legal immigration, especially about catch and release. After the Border Patrol catches an illegal immigrant, they're given a court date and released to come back to court later, except they almost never do. Then they become part of the new illegal immigrant community. They start families here and are obviously upset when their family members are deported. Just this morning, KQED had a program about a lawsuit guaranteeing that court date. Will catch and release change or stay the same? If it stays, it simply will not stay. Solve the problem. Status quo on catch and release, Jessica Wong?
Yes, it doesn't address that problem at all. The same failed dysfunctional system remains in place with respect to enforcement, and that's what's going to be the biggest hurdle in terms of support that this bill is going to have to overcome. People just don't believe that there will be any meaningful enforcement. And that's what's going to get in the way of this bill.
Do you believe there will be, Cecilia Wong?
Look,
meaningful enforcement, as she describes it?
This bill is chock full of enforcement measures, as Senator Rubio pointed out. Let me clear one thing up. The catch and release is a myth. To the contrary, our government, at our expense as taxpayers, is keeping immigrants who are fighting their deportation locked up for months and years, even when an immigration court would find the person doesn't pose a flight risk. And many of those people end up winning the right to stay here under our laws. That's a wasteful system. Catch and release doesn't exist, and nothing in this bill would make it exist.
And here's a listener named Glenn who says the H-1B program is a farce. Where I work, the H-1B workers were from Malaysia and of modest skill. Apparently, their main job was to learn the business, as a few years later, all of our jobs went offshore to Malaysia. 13 years, a wait for citizenship, too long. Well, what about the Cubans, who, under the combination of U.S. went foot dry foot policy and Cuba's new liberal migration policy, will enjoy dual citizenship after 1 year? Let me bring some more callers on, and we go to you, Guillermo. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my phone call. Early in the program, there was a comment that one of your speakers mentioned about immigrants or illegal immigrants or those who come here will take over through jobs the Americans will not do. I would like to say that as a business owner, I try to hire people who have legal documents. But one thing that hurts my business, and this is in the landscaping business, is Americans who go to the corner, pick it up some guy because it's cheap to pick it up that guy who doesn't have documents, and they know by fat they will do the job just enough, $50 or a penny, and sometimes they don't even get paid. Those guys, I believe they need to, those community need to be legalized, because when you legalize those folks, then everything is equal.
Well, Guillermo is making an important point here. I mean, that illegal labor is out there. You can find it not far from here, in fact, if you just drive less than a couple miles. So, Celia Wong, what you have to say on that.
I think Guillermo is absolutely right. One thing that having a road to citizenship is going to do is bring everyone out of the shadows, put everyone on equal footing, and prevent the exploitation of workers in this country.
And you say what, Jessica Vaughn?
Oh, I agree that we need to do what we can to prevent workers from being exploited, but simply making all of these people legal is not going to prevent them from being exploited. It's not going to raise their wages. It's simply going to make it more difficult for them to earn more money. And we've shown that the biggest effect of mass immigration is that it makes poor Americans poorer. It's had a wage-depressing effect of something like $1,400 a year for Americans and legal immigrants who are competing for the same kinds of jobs as other recent immigrants. And it's an economic fact that when you increase the supply of labor, the price of that labor goes down. And I don't see how that's good for American workers.
All right. Let me thank the caller and read Lizzie's comments on our Facebook page. She says, Michael, please stop referring to people as illegals. It is degrading, dehumanizing, and read the AP Style Guide's explanation of why they are no longer using the term illegal immigrants. As a language guy, you must appreciate the impact of classification of a group of people based on one action. Actually, the AP does say that illegal should describe an action, not a person, and prefers saying living in or immigrating to a country illegally, which sometimes can get a little clunky from a broadcaster standpoint. But this listener also writes, the idea that Obama can't be expected to enforce interior immigration policy is ludicrous. There have been far more deportations under President Obama than any other president, 90,000 in California since 2008. And by the way, less than a third of those deported had a felony conviction. Some comments on our Facebook page. Aaron asks, I'm curious, would the new blue cards count as legal identification for purposes of acquiring driver's licenses or other state permits, or is that something that will be determined on a state-by-state level? Do we know at this point about that, Cecilia Wong?
I don't know about the blue card specifically, but the bill does have a new identification requirement as part of employment verification, which does pose some serious privacy and identity theft concerns. The government does seem to be moving in this bill toward a system where everyone in America is going to be part of a database that's subject to error and subject to identity theft. There is one study I saw out of the Migration Policy Institute showing that under current error rates, if mandatory electronic verification were implemented today and just 1% of American workers were subjected to a false record check, which is a conservative estimate, millions of jobs would be lost.
And Jessica Vaughn, let me get a response from you from one of our listeners, Francis, who writes, thank you for this program. Thank you, Francis. The opposition dialogue seems to forget that the businesses that use the illegal immigrants should be called on the carpet for any suggested increase in illegal immigration, illegal immigrants. During the first years of the recession, the illegal immigration numbers were down because the jobs weren't available. So the opponents blame people who come to the country to work in jobs that many of our current legal residents aren't willing to perform. They don't discuss the responsibility of those who exploit these people. If there is to be an honest dialogue, both sides on the issue need to be honestly discussed. Jessica Vaughn?
Well, I think that the listener is correct that there needs to be some accountability for the employers who choose to hire illegal workers instead of Americans and legal immigrants. And once again, this bill doesn't do anything to increase enforcement of our immigration laws at the workplace. I mean, that's why people come here, is to work. And so when we make it much more difficult for illegal arrivals to get a job, that's when we're going to see a difference in enforcement. And, you know, the numbers of illegal arrivals did drop around 2007, 2008, but it was as much
started dropping around the recession, yeah.
That's right, but it was not just the recession. It was also the fact that enforcement of immigration laws ticked up both at the federal level and the state level at about that time. So we can enforce our immigration laws. It does make a difference. To simply give up and say, oh, we just have to give everyone amnesty and legalize them is not a solution. It's not going to prevent illegal immigration from happening in the future, and it's not going to do anything to address the fiscal and safety and security burdens that this problem imposes on American communities. And this bill is only going to make things worse.
I want to read a couple more listener comments. These are sort of outlier comments on our Facebook page. John writes, deport the Republicans and keep the undocumented immigrants. Just imagine what a wonderful world that would be. Jason writes on our website, I'm a legal citizen among millions and contribute to society via holding a full-time job, paying taxes, and planning for the future. How about providing amnesty to our student loans if working in a nonprofit industry? If we're going to break rules here, let's look in-house first and open some doors for those who could use a break. Another caller joins us. Victoria, good morning.
Hi, good morning. So I want to start off this comment by stating that I am a Democrat. I identify the Democratic Party. Since I've been able to vote, I voted for Obama, which is uneventful elections, but nonetheless. But when it comes down to this issue of immigration, I find myself leaning to the right. And I think that's coming from the fact that I am A, African American, B, I have come from poverty. I'm now a graduate of Stanford, which changes my income bracket, but I cannot help but still think about those who are most impacted by undocumented workers and low-skilled immigration. And the black unemployment numbers are, 15%, somewhere between 13 to 15%. That's not including the people who are not included in the workforce. And people continuously say that the undocumented and the low-skilled workers are doing the jobs that Americans won't do, but I think that is just a fallacy. Many Americans will do construction jobs, landscaping jobs, cooking, janitorial services. I have members of my own family who have done these jobs, and many times at not even minimum wage. And so every time somebody says that these immigrants are doing jobs that Americans won't do, I feel as if they're writing off a very marginalized portion of the American citizenry. And I think we really need to be honest about what this whole immigration issue is about. It's one of interest of the immigrants who are a significant population are Latinos, and so they have a interest of their own, and they have business interests. And then you also have the interests who aren't being served. You have the poor. You have African Americans, and we're not willing to say definitively that these policies are impacting poor people, black people, negatively. And I think once we are able to actually say these things out loud, then we will be able to say, okay, that may be true, but whatever, I'm going to continue to serve the interest that I want to serve. Or maybe we'll start to really rethink, you know, what these policies actually mean to the whole.
Well, let me get a response from you, Cecilia Wong, on Victoria's comments. I mean, this is hurting much more than has been described in the advocacy, for example, blacks and Latinos and people who are doing jobs that they're glad to be doing and that they like the pay that they're getting for.
Right. Well, I've never said that immigrants are taking jobs that Americans won't do. I agree with the caller that's
often said, though.
It's often said, but I don't think it's true. I agree with the caller. And, you know, one thing.
So then is this going to be taking jobs away from those people?
No, it won't. I think, as we've said already, the whole point of having this road to citizenship is to put everyone on equal footing. And one thing that I think we've seen that has been so heartening about the process leading up to the bill being introduced is that people are standing in coalition. Labor, organized labor in our country, have come together. People of all races and ethnicities are standing together. And we've seen that in the past several years, in fact. I was talking to some folks in the South and North Carolina and Alabama, where African Americans, the civil rights leaders in those states, have really stood up for immigrant communities and have said what's happening to immigrant communities right now without immigration reform is putting them at risk and putting civil rights at risk, just as we went through it in earlier times and still are. Let's stand together.
All right. I thank Victoria for the call. And I think, Richard, we're going to hear sort of a different perspective from you on taking jobs away. And go ahead, please join us.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me on. I'll make this quick. I was a boarding officer in the Gulf of Mexico, and I had the availability to validate credentials, visas, driver's license. The employers, the captains, the shrimp boat companies that I was actually pulling these undocumented immigrants off of the shrimp boats, they were often, their biggest chief complaint was to me that they were unable to validate visas and driver's license, so they were unknowingly hiring undocumented aliens. But the point I want to make is they were unable to find anybody else who was willing to perform those labor-intensive jobs out there in the Gulf of Mexico. Working odd hours, long hours. The only people they were able to find were these people with these false credentials willing to go out there and work for them. So I'll take my comment off the air, and thank you very much.
Okay, where do you weigh in on this, Jessica Vaughn?
Well, there's no such thing as a job an American won't do. If employers will pay enough for a job to make it worthwhile for someone to take it, then there will be someone to take that job. I mean, look, we have 22 million un- and underemployed people in our country. We don't have a shortage of labor. You can't find an economist in this country that says that we need, that we have a shortage of unskilled labor. It simply isn't true. And no one disputes the human value of immigrants to this country, whether they're legal or illegal. But the point is that we have to control immigration for the good of our country and for Americans and legal immigrants. And that can be hard to do. We have to enforce the limits we establish, even when the people who are coming in remind us of our own ancestors.
Well, we'll have to let it stand there because we are out of time. You get the last word. Thank you, Jessica Vaughn, Director of Policy Studies with the Center for Immigration Studies. Thank you also, Cecilia Wong, who joined us here in studio, Director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project. And thanks to Laura McGann, who was with us earlier from Politico. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.